been absolutely ages since I've seen this lovely woman in the studio. For this month's book club, it's back again with Sylvia Kent. Hello, Sylvia.
Hello.
And we've also got Lorna Slade as well. Hello, Lorna.
Hi.
Hello. Lovely to see you both in the studio. Now, Sylvia is a freelance columnist, author. Her features have appeared in national and regional magazines and online journals. She's also won Freelance Writer of the Year for Writing Magazine. She's appeared in 64 titles. Her books, Folklore of Essex, contributed to Channel 5's film Country Secrets. She's got ebooks out there. I think she's on her 10th book. Is it the 10th Barking in Dagenham from Old Photographs?
That was the 10th.
Yes. And we sometimes keep our fingers crossed. There could be an 11th.
Maybe not.
Maybe. And her blog is hugely successful, and we will give you all the details for that.
Thank you.
Also joining us today on Book Club is Lorna Slade. Now, Lorna's been a journalist for 34 years, working for The Observer and The Sunday Times, and she's currently the editor of Rail Professional. And Lorna is going to be talking about how to get into journalism. First, thank you very much for the marmalade.
Oh.
I was saying to Mikey Porter this morning, I said, we were talking about Piccalilli. I said, well, Sylvia bought me in some homemade Piccalilli last year. I said, well, I'll just try it with a bit of cheese because I don't eat that much cheese. I said, literally 4 days, gone.
Well, one cauliflower does a couple of jars, you know.
Oh, it's delicious.
Yeah, and if you like doing that sort of thing, which is a bit odd, isn't it, making preserves?
They taste so much better than the stuff you get in the shops.
Well, my magazine, I've been writing for them 16 months, it's Home Farmer. Yep. And in it, it's got everything you can imagine to do with gardening, allotmenteering, and I'm there to make the wine. So I have to give a recipe every month. Mm. And having actually made the wine, you see, because I've been making it for 40 years.
Yeah.
So somewhere in my book, there's a recipe. So we did Beaujolais Nouveau for November, because on the 15th, they used to cart it over, fly it over from France to England that month.
Yeah.
And so I've given them a recipe for using your own grapes, squashing them yourself, and making the wine.
Mm. Didn't get any wine, though. But I have had wine before and it was very nice, thank you. So I look forward to next month's book club. It is coming up for Christmas. Who knows what I'm going to get? Maybe some mince pies. Just starting with you, what have you been up to? Because I've not seen you because I've been away on holiday. And what's going on with the Billericay Readers Group?
Well, the Readers goes on and on. It's 16 years. We started it 16 years ago and members have come and gone. We've got a lovely group, dozen of us now, reading books. Which are brought in by the library. We're very grateful. We don't buy books. They bring them in when we ask for them. And the one at the moment I'm just about to start is The Year of the Runaways by Sanjeet Sahota. And he's a young Indian writer living in Derbyshire. Mm. This book looks really hot. I'm really looking forward to having a day or so to get through it. I'm writing, not a book, I'm rewriting a booklet for our museum, the Case Museum. And because this is a month or year, I should say, of anniversaries, we're bringing out the Billericay Zeppelin, because it's 100 years since that came down over Billericay.
Yeah.
Had it come down in the High Street, a lot of them would have been wiped out in 1916. It's the L32. The book is almost at the publishing house, and it should be ready for the 12th of November, which is a Saturday, 2 to 4. I shall be there hoping to sign, but I will be bringing four other authors with me, all written books, all of whom have been on this programme.
Yep.
All your mates, you know, that have been in over the years. Francis Clamp, Jim Reeve, Dawn Knox, Maggie Ford and me. Five of us in Billericay Library. And I'll send you a poster because it's going all over the place.
I thought you were going to say send me a postcard. I was about to say...
Publicity is terribly important.
Yeah.
We have been talking about that, not only with authors, but with everything, with singers and with people that you have, all the creatives, do need to tell people about their work. How else can they do it? I would say, though, that the Zeppelin commemoration was poignant. It was so sad, really. It was the 100 years on that day, the 24th of September, when Freddie Sowery shot the Zeppelin down. Tiny little aeroplane. It's on the back of my book. And who should we have to be our guest? Air Marshal Sir Freddie Sowry, the son of the man who shot down the Zeppelin. So it wasn't a celebration, it was a commemoration. And we had the Billericay Town Council arranged for the special event, which was put up really near the spot where the Zeppelin came down, in Greens Farm Lane, Billericay. So lots and lots of people came along.
So with the Zeppelins, just to say, when they were flying over during the war, did they actually have bombs that they dropped?
Oh, yes.
In? That's
yes.
what they... Because yes. I don't know much yes. about the Zeppelin. So they did, well, they've had several bombs on board.
Oh, yes. Very well, actually, the Zeppelin made a terrible noise.
Oh, it did?
Yes.
Oh, right.
I mean, you would have lost your hearing if you had been perpetually in a Zeppelin, because the noise was tremendous. And this was at the beginning of aircraft, you know, used in battle. I would say Lord Peter came along to that event. He's Lord Lieutenant of Essex, and Air Marshal Sir Freddie, as we mentioned. But we also had Air Commodore Dean Andrew from RAF Waddington, and lots of other people, important people. It was quite a day. In the afternoon we had another event, and in the evening we had a lecture. And I must mention Karen Dennis, who represented the Western Fund Association, and Leslie Bartram, who was he's our boss at the Cater Museum. I'm just
now I'm joined by Sylvia Kent and Lorna Slade for this month's book club, and we're going to move over to Lorna's. Hello there.
Hi.
Hello, lovely to meet you today. Now, you've been a journalist for 34 years, working for The Observer and The Sunday Times, and you're currently the editor of Rail Professional. So thanks very much for coming in today. What made you want to get into journalism? How did you just sort of discover that was something that interested you?
I think when I was 13, I saw a programme about a local newspaper reporter. And she was driving around the local area finding stories, and I thought that was an amazing job, and really not sure why even to this day, but I thought that's it, I'm going to do that. And I set out to do that. So applied for a job in journalism when I was 18 on Chemistry in Britain magazine. And they sponsored me on a year-long diploma in periodical journalism, and it went from there.
You're saying at the moment you're doing Rail Professional. So how did you move from your first sort of job through the ranks, if you like?
I did what a lot of journalists do. I kind of moved between trade magazines, PR, corporate communications, the nationals, local papers. I've done everything. So that was just one part of the journey. I worked on the staff of The Observer. I was freelance for The Sunday Times. I didn't actually work for them. But so I think the best of us, without sounding too big-headed, can make those switches and move across. And if I'm honest, we tend to do it for the money in the end, because it wasn't so well paid on The Observer.
They say we've got a story, could you go and cover it, or is it...
No.
How does it work?
Well, on The Observer it worked that you had to find a story, you had to come up with a subject, you had to be quick thinking and creative and sit in a meeting on a Monday and say, this is what I want to look at. So it's that ability to look round you and think, what's really mattering to people? What story do I want to convey? And so on.
And could that be any subject?
On The Observer, it was... I was lucky enough to be looking at workplace issues and personal finance. So I covered things like bullying, workaholism, Christianity in the workplace, and so on, and personal finance issues, such as childcare costs or mortgage rates or credit rate, you know, all of that. And it was tough. You were as good as your last story. And you could either be ignored or lavishly attended to by the section editor according to how well things had gone. And one of the things perhaps that was more difficult on that was the expectation of putting a socialist spin on things sometimes, which I didn't particularly agree with. But it was the most amazing training, which every journalist should have, on how to get information across, you know, boom, boom, boom. This is, these are the most important facts. This is how you can, you get that in the first paragraph and you go from there. And you have to think fast and illustrate things and make it engaging. And there's no opportunity to miss a deadline or not have your, you know, thinking hat on that day.
I just saw out the corner of my eye. I just saw Sylvia clutch her chest in and go, oh, deadlines, deadlines.
It certainly is. If you miss it, you've missed your chance, haven't you?
You can be the most talented writer, but if you can't meet a deadline, you're going nowhere.
So if we're talking about sort of going back to the very beginning, we're used to being in a society where we're in offices with computers. We've got, you know, you don't have a notepad and pen. You'd have an iPad to jot stuff down, or you're recording somebody into your... That sort of thing wouldn't have been available. So was it basically your typewriter, or did you start off with computers? Or
I did start off with a manual typewriter and the phone. Mm. And I think I did just as well as I would do these days, if not better, because people were more accessible. You just had someone's phone number, you phoned them up, you got the story or not.
Yeah.
And then I moved on to Apple Macs and all of that. But yes, I don't think that there's any improvement, weirdly enough, these days in how well we can gather information. Because it still boils down to, can you make good contacts? Can you maintain those contacts? You have to get out and about in the field. Mm. Those are the people that are going to give you the story.
Yeah.
More than anything you'll see on social media. Really. So it's that human contact still, as it ever was.
We can talk a little bit more about journalism, but I want to talk about you being an editor, because obviously coming up being a journalist and working for an editor, how do you find it? Have you picked up some of the traits of the editors that you have worked for that you admired?
Yeah, I guess I have. It does sink in sort of subliminally. I think that what you have to do is know what you want to cover, know where to go to find it, know the right people to speak to, And get them to do that for you by a set date and not give them the option of not doing it.
Yeah.
And if you can do that politely, they tend to do it. It's amazing because they can see that if you're professional and you take your work seriously, they take you seriously.
Mm.
And they'll do the writing for free, as they do for Rail Professional.
Yeah.
And that's great. So it's just having that mindset that you have to be rigid, you have to be working to deadlines, you have to be results-oriented. Nothing else is an option.
Mm. What would you say to people listening that are thinking about going into the career? What do they realistically need?
I think the best courses to look for are those that are run by the NCTJ. And that was like, in my day, it was NCTJ's everything.
Mm.
But then we had the rise of, you know, City University, all the postgraduate degree courses. And they're brilliant, you know, and there are loads. There's Bournemouth, Cardiff, University College Falmouth. There's the Press Association, and I think the best one is News Associates. They're very, very good.
Mm.
So I think that journalism is one of those few careers where you don't need a degree, but if you do have one and you maybe specialise in science, for example, then you'll be well sought after in journalism.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, you know, affect things.
So being a freelance journalist just means you can get any newspaper that ring you up, or do you go to them with a story you've got?
You go to them and say, can I, you know, are you employed? That's less common these days. In my day, it was kind of, you just phone up someone and you say, have you got a job? Can I do some stuff? As I did for the Sunday Times. And yes, that's fine. These days, they're less accessible. They have their own training courses. It's a lot more formal.
Mm.
It's harder.
Yeah.
So I guess the way to go into it is to get that proper training now.
Yeah.
That's not to say that a talented school leaver can not, you know, go to work and be sponsored by a local paper. That can happen.
Trained to be a psychotherapist. Tell us a little, because this is fascinating, when I read this morning, tell us about it.
So I specialise in adult children of narcissists and their healing journey. And it's quite a deep and specialised area.
People out there might think, well, what is a narcissist?
So I think there's known to be a genetic link, so not every child who has a traumatic childhood will become a narcissist, but those where that is, that genetic tendency, will, if the environment is traumatic enough, they'll make that split that turns them into a kind of Jekyll and Hyde. There's that mask wearing, particularly with covert narcissists. Grandiose narcissists are more easy to spot. But a covert is much more dangerous because the people around you won't necessarily see it. It's only the people they target that suffer. And so my specialism is covert narcissistic mothers. But the after effects are the same, and I've seen plenty of them as clients, that as children they tend to dissociate, they either get punished or ignored, and they get to learn that it's not safe to feel their own emotions. It's safer to see how everyone else is feeling. So they become hypervigilant and totally unaware that their own needs are valid, and that extends into adulthood, because a narcissist will lie, lack empathy, target you, smear campaign you, all of that, So when you've been subjected to that, you come out of that not really knowing who you are and what's real. Mm. Because at the same time, they're telling you, you imagine that. How dare you question my parenting?
Yeah.
And that does a lot of damage. So as adults, they can be happily married, but sit there saying to me, I feel lonely, there's something not right with me.
Yeah.
And they have to tell their story. And what I try to do is to validate those emotions they weren't allowed to get in touch with.
Mm.
They are allowed to be angry. They are allowed all of that stuff. But the healing journey for a narcissistically abused adult is deep and long, and it can take years. So they have to make a deep dive into that grief and pain for what they didn't receive. And when they come through it, and that can take years, they'll be a different person, because people avoid pain. But you can't avoid the grief and the pain that's deep in you.
Yeah.
You need to flush it out. And the trick during that time is to abstain from love and approval and live that kind of life, so that you develop an emotional backbone, so that you're not addicted to love and approval. Even though you've never had it, if you can do without it, you can focus on yourself, so that you learn to take care of your own emotional needs. And that's huge. So the idea is you focus on your rights, your worthiness, such that you love, cherish, commit and support yourself above all others. If you don't accept yourself, other people can't grant you that, and they'll treat you how you treat yourself.
Yeah.
So when you're good enough for yourself, your life will change. And that journey is huge, and it involves inner child work, you know, all sorts of other work that I've went into in my Mental Health Matters episode 15 podcast with Bob. And for me, that's profound. And it means so much to me to help others through that, out through the other side, because self-love is all.
Yeah.
And if you don't understand yourself and have that self-insight, you're going to act out in ways you don't even understand. You're going to self-sabotage. You're not going to really know yourself, and you won't be able to stop that. You'll have those tapes playing that you're worthless, and you'll bring that to everything you do.
Yeah.
So it's really amazing to get people to know themselves better, and that empowers them. And there can be a lot of resistance to that, but if you can, you know, work with them and they trust you, then we can go places.
To the news. So we were going to close the book. That was fantastic. thank you very much. You're so interesting, Laura. It's lovely to meet you.
And you.
Really, really interesting subject. And if you do want to find out more, do check out the website, and you'll find it on Bob Simpson's podcast. And yourself, Sylvia, you'll be back next month with more.
Yes. This is really October, isn't it? Because we ran out of time. But so there'll be another lovely person like Lorna.
Yep.
Probably towards the end of November.
Yep.